Welcome to Rock to Recovery Radio. This is our second show ever on KX93.5 FM. This is your host, Wesley Gear, here, and we're going to go on a little journey today. The reason why I'm here is because I'm a sober dude. Somehow out there in the craziness, I did not die. And I'm really passionate about recovery. So we're going to get into it. We had a cool show today. I got some cool old friends that also didn't die out there in the madness in the studio with me today. First, I want to thank KX93.5 for the opportunity and to our partner, New Vista Behavioral Health, for helping support our cause and creating this recovery-based radio show. Very cool. So the show is intended to bring light to this killer disease of addiction that I think by now has touched everybody. But I think, you know, what we agree is by talking about it, by exposing it, by being vulnerable, it takes the power out of it and it gives the power back to the people to recover. We can help each other recover. We don't have to hide and die in backs of bars or in bedrooms or bathrooms, some of those crazy places that we creeps can go when we're in those bad ways we're at. So what we're going to do is chronicle the stories of rock stars, artists, celebrities, rad humans that have overcome these demons to thrive in this world rife with challenges. So today I have a very special guest and longtime friend. I think I'm the only guy about 10 or 12 years now. Hard to believe.
Yeah. Even more than that.
Yeah, it makes you feel old when you talk about that. So I won't put too much focus on there. Now, this guy, super cool, loving dude, super fun, full of rad energy, but went through a lot of the similar journey that I did and a lot of our friends did. You guys may know him from Baywatch. And you also may not know, or you do know, that he had two albums with two top 10 hits and was inducted into the World Music Hall of Fame. That's pretty bad. And so, without further ado, let's give a warm round of applause to our man, Jeremy Jackson.
Yeah! Yeah.
Jeremy! JJ! Yeah! Jeremy, how's it going, my man?
Fantastic, brother. How you doing? Thanks for having me on the show, dog.
Oh, so happy you're here. So happy. So tell me, Jeremy, let's just get right into it.
Throw all the BS out the window and just...
Yeah.
You want to go there?
Yeah, I'm sure. Let's do it. So tell me. First, I want to know, how does a guy... I don't know. What was your character's name on Baywatch?
Hobie. It was Hobie Buchanan. I played David Hasselhoff's son. Gosh, I got the job when I was about 10 years old.
How does that happen? Was that your mom? Like, hey, yo, we're going to some auditions?
Yeah, it was a lot of auditions. You know, I started acting when I was about 6. And... early on, I found the high of performance, accolades, approval. Yeah. I didn't have a dad, So, I mean, I used to sit in my bedroom when I was like 3, 4, 5, 6 and record radio shows like this. I had a little karaoke machine and I would pause, stop, play, put in the tape, like interview myself as somebody else. Or like, hey, this is Jeremy Jackson and
that's
you're
cool.
Listening to, and I like play songs I liked and I would perform, do plays and dances, and I'd put on costumes and memorize records and have all my mom's friends come in the living room and be like, okay, everybody sit down and, little performances. I just loved it. It was in my heart. It was a passion of mine. So I found that, that endorphin rush, the dopamine rush of performance and approval. I think partly because I didn't have a dad when I would walk in. So my mom's like, okay, you're just an entertainer. Let's go to auditions, I guess. I'm supposed to do this for you because you won't stop.
Yeah.
And then here's these directors and producers and agents and they're guys, and they're like, hey, I like this kid. Good job, kid. And I'm like, oh, this is what it feels like. This is where I'm supposed to be. So I did a really good job. I tried really hard. I put my heart into it and I enjoyed pleasing, And so it just kind of took off from there.
So your mom was reacting to what her son was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this
mm-hmm.
kid's made for the stage and whatever.
Yeah, when I was a year old, I was practicing my Michael Jackson moves every day, all day. So I would be in my socks on the hardwood floor, perfecting the spin. I actually fell and got 135 stitches in my forehead.
Wow.
I fell on a cup, you know what I mean? So,
You should have sent MJ the bill.
It was Elvis, it was MJ, And I used to watch these guys and the crowds they would come out to. And I would like, I would hope one day I could, you know, do that. And it was pretty cool, as you know,
yeah.
if you've always pictured it in your mind and then you get off the plane and then there's the thousands of people waiting. I mean, you know, you're like, oh, yeah. I did it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I remember when I played our first big festival and I was playing a song that I wrote. And watching people bounce to it. Mm. You're like, whoa, this is what you've been working so long. It has a very personal feeling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool. So did you go straight to auditions, like film kind of stuff, or did you do any stage stuff?
Yeah, I ended up doing 60 national commercials, or 30 national commercials, 30 other commercials, so like 60 commercials altogether. And then I did some soap operas and some, you know, I did like Days of Our Lives. And I did like Wonder Years. I played, you know, Fred Savage as a little kid, you know, and I started like being around these celebrities and doing this cool stuff. And then Baywatch was when I was 10. I had already done, I did a movie with John Travolta before Baywatch. I did some cool stuff. I worked with some like Academy Award winning actors and stuff that would, you know, do like private acting, like sessions with me for the movie. I did like an independent movie with Sally Kirkland. It was like, I had to cry a lot. I had to get into these deep roles pretty young, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so this is, you're around 10, you're already in the trailer life. Like you're used to seeing your name on the trailer.
Yeah, I'm already too busy to even go to school by that point, you know? Man. So I was doing like homeschool and stuff like that.
And listen how articulate you are. Yeah, I'm telling you. I'm telling you. Yeah, that's cool. So the fact that I have a diploma is a joke, but somehow I'm not a complete idiot. So I don't know that we all need school is what I'm saying. Kids, stay in school, but whatever.
Definitely.
Yeah, so.
I was never smart enough to do the school, but I was smart enough to get out of it somehow. It's kind of weird.
Savvy. Savvy. Yeah. So tell me, when did you pick up, what was the first high? Was it booze? What was it?
Man, you know. Sugar probably was first, yeah. honestly. And I used to love to play chemist. We're talking probably 3 years old. I would sneak around the house and like hide the Pine Sol and the rubbing alcohol and the bleach and take a little bit of Comet. And I would like bindle up these chemicals and steal a little bit. And then I'd go in the bathroom and shove a towel under the door and I would mix them together in different ways. Like, let's see what happens. Wow. With peroxide and bleach and sea breeze facial toner. Nothing really happened. Like, sometimes I would melt the freaking Tupperware. Whoa. You know what I mean? The plastic would be melting. And I did it all the time. I can remember getting my ass whooped. Like I would get spankings, gnarly spankings. Like we're broke. It's single mom. Like you're using all my dang bleach. Yeah. Bang, bang, bang. And I was huffing, dude. I was getting high things. On the fumes. I was putting the towel under the door, totally getting high on the excitement of being naughty and the melting stuff and being naughty. And I also, around those years, 3, 4, 5, blew out every single outlet in the house.
How?
Maybe a bobby pin won't do it. It's got this plastic on it. Boom, fly across the room. Okay, I wonder if a fork will do the same thing the bobby pin did. Bang, zap. Yeah. And it wasn't until I hit the dryer outlet and like almost fried myself that I gave up on outlets sticking metal things in outlets.
That's like 240 volts.
Yeah,
or something,
it's
right?
Got to be. I mean, that's out the gate right there.
That's insane.
Maybe it'll be different this time.
So you're liking the mischief and that closet chemical stuff sounds like a tweaker ready to come out.
Totally. Somehow I knew that there was a secret hiding in the chemical world for me, and I was going to find it. I was 9, I would steal cigarettes out of ashtrays, and I would dip them in nail polish remover and wait for them to dry and then smoke them.
What the
This
heck?
Is like, yeah.
Where do you even learn this stuff?
Nope, that's the thing. Nobody taught me that. That's not a thing, but I would smell it and be like, there's something there.
So maybe intuitively.
Intuitively, I knew that somehow, some way, if I was going to, well, the cigarette wasn't enough already. Yeah. I was already smoking the butts out of ashtrays and I was like, this is cool. I see older kids doing that. They seem cool. They seem happy. They're doing something that I'm not allowed to do, which means it must be some information there for me that I need to pick up. But let me see if I can take it to the next level and, you know, take it up a notch. I was already looking to take it up a notch.
Yeah, that's interesting. But when you're, what, you're saying 9 or 10, you're smoking cigarettes?
Yeah.
I did it pretty young, and that gives you a head rush. That feels
totally.
Like a high.
Totally.
Then, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I think you could almost argue or say, like, if you're searching for that, then somehow maybe deep inside you're looking for escape.
Most likely, yes.
Okay, so I was going to ask you what paint color worked the best in the cigarette, but let's just skip over that question. But
it didn't do anything. I was really bummed, really bummed.
Let's talk about when did you get to the real stuff?
I started stealing roaches out of a neighbor lady's car, probably by 11 or 12.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then, do you remember the first time you felt, you know, high, changed, loaded?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I was such ants in my pants, so fastidiously, you know, even from the first high, it was not enough to even remember. It was like, okay, that's cool, but what's next? I like didn't even enjoy my first high. It was like, okay, but what's next? So yeah. Then she had her 12-year-old daughter and the lady would go to work and then was like going under the lady's bed where she had a real box of weed and then like hooking up with the girl at 12. It was like always like had to heighten the experience.
Yeah. Something that makes you feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It takes you out of yourself. Wow. Okay. So it started with weed.
Yep.
Cigarettes and weed.
Definitely.
And then what? And then so you probably started acting and you got the Baywatch gig around now.
Mm-hmm.
When did it kick up a notch?
The Baywatch gig was convenient because it was all summer. You know, so I'd work for, 3 months out of the summer and then I'd come back and chill in the winter with all this money, you know? So I would run amok. I think I probably went to my first rehab around 14.
Because
I would get so tore back running away from home, keggers. I had the money. My buddies, I want a party, but my car's an impound. How much is it? Dude, it's $3,500 bucks. Okay, it's cool. Here, I got it. You know, my 16-year-old buddy when I'm 14.
Yeah.
That's
interesting. You're running away from home because you got the Baywatch gig, so you're gone a lot. You're not going to school. You got plenty of money and all these people to run with. I'm surprised that you still wanted to get away from home.
Yeah. Well, my mom was really loving. Ugh, can you imagine?
Oh.
Loving and protective and caring and trying to guide me and. Ugh.
Actually, it makes total sense now because you just wanted to do what you wanted to do.
Exactly.
And didn't want mom making you feel bad about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And then there's the whole I didn't have a dad, presumed spouse, I'm the breadwinner. Like, what are you talking about, chick? You know?
Wow.
I just won't go to work tomorrow then. How about that?
Wow.
You know, I can't go out tonight. You know? So I started throwing my weight around and being real.
Can you guys imagine that? The listeners, can we just like pause on that for a second? So you're maybe 12 years old.
Yeah.
And 14, you're telling your mom who's like, yo, maybe you should chill out, son. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
I'm bringing home the money, woman.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that conversation? Wow.
Yeah.
I had an ego problem with just a crummy little band that played clubs. I can't imagine what I would have got into with that.
Yep.
So you're starting to run amok a lot more. Did you kind of know it maybe a little bit?
Mm.
Or was the ego overpowering the conflict you had with your mom?
Yeah. I mean, my grandma used to tell me this all the time. Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. Like, that was my mentality. Like, I ignore whatever's on the peripheral. It's all about what's in front of me, what I want to do. It'll work itself out later, you know?
Isn't it funny how we could take a certain quote that maybe isn't supposed to be so devious and apply it?
Totally.
Yeah. So your mom's like, please, Jeremy, don't do that. And you're like, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
Yep, exactly.
You feel like a war hero at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So what you guys don't know that who are listening at home, wherever you are in the car, we also have another special guest here that I brought in for a reason. And I think you guys met right about where we are.
Yeah, totally.
Check.
Yeah, so we have.
Check the mic on.
Nate, the magic man, Lawler.
What's up?
Is that what they call you now?
How's my radio voice sound? Let me get it deeper. There you go.
So sexy. So when did you and Nate meet up?
We met surfing.
Yep.
Yeah. We met surfing in Newport Beach.
How old?
Oh God, you were 17? 16?
Mm-hmm.
You were 16, I was 20?
Maybe even 15, and we started hanging out 19? When I was 16.
Yeah.
So you had a long run on Baywatch. You started Baywatch at 10 and 6 years, 7 years?
Dude, I did all the way till I was 21. Yeah. I came back for the final, like, you know, I did them a favor of coming back for a finale episode.
You honored them with your... That show would have flopped without you.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
I remember, though, where I was surfing, I recognized you in the water. Mm-hmm. And then... I don't remember all the details, but we started talking and hitting it off
right
away.
You remember every last second.
I think you said something.
But I remember I was going, I go, that's the kid from Baywatch.
We were getting waves. Nate and I were tearing it up.
No, we were.
Yeah, we were.
He had some brand new Al Merrick surfboard, you know, like the nicest suit on and everything. Yeah. Looking all good and tan. But he was a nice guy. Right away, I had Jeremy and I just had this connection right away because we're both just wild, silly, funny guys that just like to have a good time, you know? And then I think what eventually happened is I moved in to his mom's house, his mom's apartment, and she was thinking that I was going to be a good role model to Jeremy, which I kind of was.
Yeah, he tried.
You know, and I got to take him to Baywatch because I had a license, and I took him to Baywatch for a season. And you're right, he had his own trailer. He was a superstar, man. Yeah. Bunch of gorgeous women all over the place. And
only Donna DeRico and Pam Anderson.
Nikki Sixx showing up.
Yeah,
you know,
remember that?
Like, yeah, Nikki
Tommy
Sixx.
Lee showing up, I mean, Nikki Sixx showing
just
up.
Just all these... It was like a dream world, you know? So
what people at home don't know is that Nate's a singer at this point. He's got a band. What band were you in?
No, I wasn't singing.
You weren't singing yet?
Yeah, dude. Was Redliners before?
Midway or something.
Midway.
Yeah, so you're starting to sing, right?
I was writing songs and showing them to Jeremy.
Yeah, he just moved from Temecula, basically, right? Yeah. Working at the Macaroni Grill.
Yeah.
Writing songs. I still have books of original songs that Nate wrote living at my house that I saved because I always knew someday he'd be a superstar, even if I had to kill him to make it happen. No, I'm just kidding. I have original stuff that he wrote and
I would show them to you. I remember. I'd be like, this song's about that girl, Lourdes, who broke up with me. Yep. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
All of them were basically about one girl.
Hey, man, every singer I've known, the best song comes out when their heart gets crushed, you know? So good.
Lady in red, driving me crazy.
So hey, let's pause in the story right now and do a little musical break. I feel like this song, this is one of Jeremy, the songs you picked to play. Okay. And I think it's appropriate for this point of the story. Let's play Freak on a Leash. And why did you pick that?
You know, this song, I went to Michael's house.
Palm Springs?
Palm Springs.
Yeah.
I was probably about 17 or maybe 18. It was a really painful time in my life. I was really raw and hurting and scabby and sucked up and just, you know what I mean? Like if I could break my own teeth off, clenching my jaw, I would have, you know, and you just, I want to scratch your face off. And this song really helped me a lot. I remember staff would give me a radio only so often so I could listen to it. And it like literally this song kept me sane.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, I played for Korn for a little bit, but what people don't realize that don't know heavy music is how many people it helps.
Oh, yeah.
They think it's going to, like, turn good people bad when they hear, like, dark lyrics, but actually, when people are like you or whomever that's going through a tough, dark time, they feel like they're not alone.
Yeah.
So this was your theme song at that time. Mm-hmm. So here it is.
Takes a part of me, something lost and never seen. Every time I start to believe, something's raped and taken from me. Life's gotta always be messing with me. Can't it chill and let me be free? Can't I take away all pain? I try to every night, all in vain, in vain. Sometimes I cannot take this place. Sometimes it's my life I can't taste. Sometimes I cannot feel my
Jeremy Jackson theme song of whatever year that was. Yeah, yeah, nice.
Early recovery.
Yeah, so
check. There it is.
There it is.
Hey,
so, moving the. Thank God Zach's here helping with the knobs. I get lost with this stuff. So let's move the story along. You're going big. Nate's kind of shy. He's kind of freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
But let's. When did you start? Like, when did it go too far? Like, when did you start knowing you had a problem? Like, for real.
Oh man, I don't. I really am super stubborn, so I refuse to allow myself to think I had a problem for so too long.
Did you have any negative? Because I'm thinking, you know, like for me when I was touring. What's a negative repercussion? Your friends bring you booze. You're a rock star. In your case, you're an actor. So getting messed up was like, that's what we do. What are you talking about? How do you quantify, like, you know, hey, I'm out of control? Could you at all?
No, man. It was, you know, everything was everybody else's fault. If people would just get out of my way or do as I suggest or listen to me or just let me go or just stop trying, you know. That's how it was.
Yeah.
And really, you know, when push came to shove, screw it then. Screw that movie. Screw that this other show I'm supposed to do. Screw that tour. I just won't do it. I'd rather party. I'd rather party, period. So when I was 12, releasing music, traveling in Europe and performing in clubs, and I got that club bug. You know what I mean? I'm like 12 and I think I'm 21.
You love the clubs.
Oh, I love the clubs.
That. Yep.
Yeah.
You were promoting clubs and stuff, man. This guy... Yeah.
Oh.
This guy was at the height. I mean, he was huge. Women all over him. Older women, younger women. Oh, I mean, you were just a teenager, man. And he was, oh, my God.
I was 12 years old eating space cake with the the Dutch kickboxing female champion and my rep from the record label. I can remember being between these two 20-something big, beautiful, you know, Dutch ladies, you know, like,
and they loved some Jeremy Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
That's why my mom was like, Nate, please, he likes you. You're just keep him in line. Just keep him from dying, basically.
I think you actually corrupted me.
You got
me started.
Yeah, Nate, what was it from the outside? Because you're coming in and you're a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I wasn't that out of control at 20. I mean, I'm a pastor's kid. I was, you know, I had my both parents around. I wasn't even, I mean, Jeremy, I used to get sick off weed.
Yeah, he would take one hit and have a panic attack.
Yeah, so this kid was like, just, he had money, fam. He's just smoking weed. He's just, and then you started getting into the meth.
Yeah.
And that's when I started.
When did that happen?
I don't know. When was that?
Well.
Were you doing meth in the Baywatch trailer?
No.
Gosh, I did.
You did?
Like once or twice.
Did you ever have to film a scene like when you're tweaking?
One time and I quit. I ended up quitting like that day. So I had around probably 15, I started doing a lot of blow and I just thought coke was the coolest thing ever. And I'm going to mansion parties and I'm, you know, I got blow and velvet suits and rings on every finger and
I think
purple
blow
hair.
Blow does that to people. You start doing blow and you wear velvet.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
And I loved it. But one night I ran out of blow and there was this girl I was dating and she's like, hey, do some candy. You can love it. It's candy. I'm like, what's candy? And she's like, it's candy. It's crystal.
Oh my gosh.
I'm like, what does candy crystal do?
Makes it sound so good.
And I was like, ew, that's trailer trash stuff. Yeah. That's cheap drug. You know, but of course I did it.
And loved it.
It was gone. Gonzo.
You had arrived.
At that point. I think I was about 18.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, 18, maybe early 17.
I remember.
Or late 17s.
I remember you got me to smoke some in a garage at a party after one of your big club events or something, and I freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
You were like tripping on me, like, come on, dog, what's wrong with you, Nate?
He was in a loop, you know, when people get in the loop and they keep saying the same thing and doing the same thing over and over again, trying to keep talking out of the loop. He was in the loop, man.
I told myself I'd never do that again. I was like that too. I was like, only coke, you know.
Fast forward to like four years later and you got no teeth.
Wait,
and you're painting hats.
Well, no, it was longer than that. It was probably like 10 years. Once I started doing that stuff, man, it just went downhill. Oof. Real fast. Jeremy actually came when I was in the Salvation Army to my graduation.
Yep. Wow.
He was there. That was a
Salvation
big,
Army.
Big deal for
you
me.
You weren't working there. You were in the rehab program.
No, I was in the rehab, the last house on the block.
Yeah. Big time.
Yeah. Talk about going from, you know, playing sold out House of Blues shows to nothing, you know, being arrested, missing teeth, man. Like, it just took me out quick. And the one person that I loved the most and I knew had gotten sober showed up for me and was there.
Of course.
That was huge.
That's a big deal.
It was huge. It was huge. He was always in my corner.
Yeah.
You know?
I was, you know, early on, Nate really had no idea what an addict was or what kind of addict he was. Or he was always so on the line that when he had gone over, I was over the line. I was like, I don't know if he's ever going to come back because with all the stuff I've been through and done, this all this hard-won experience to almost losing everything, I hope. Yeah, I knew what a miracle it was for me and just believing in that miracle for other people, especially when you did so much less than me. You know what I mean? Like you did so much, not as long as me. I was like, oh man, I hope he gets it, you know?
Yeah, when you cross that line, now you cross that line.
So I'm so glad you know.
I'm glad we're both
friends
here.
Again.
Yeah,
let's go back. Let's back up the timeline a little bit to when, because you were just talking about being sober. What made you get sober the first time? What was the bottom you hit, the clarity? Because what I was hearing is fun, and then fun with problems, where you're still like, full speed ahead.
Mm-hmm.
When was it just problems, hit bottom? You got to, that's a big switch from where we're at.
Yeah. So I'm 20 years old.
He just burped everybody.
And blew it off to the side. Actually, blew it in my face.
That's love.
Yeah, that's love.
Just love.
20 years old. I've been smoking meth since I was 18. Learned how to cook meth from some Hell's Angels.
So the chemistry's coming into play now.
I forgot about that, dude. Yeah. Oh, this is a great story.
I'm in Yorba Linda. I'm living with some chickens.
Year?
What?
I lived in Yorba Linda.
There you go. YL homie represents.
YL son.
You.
YL tweakers unite.
You're painting hats.
Yeah.
You're doing more than painting hats.
So you're manufacturing.
I'm living with this chick, this overweight chick that's got a kid and lives with her mom, and the mom's banging on the door wondering if I'm in there. You know, like just real decrepit stuff. She's probably like 15 years old.
So Baywatch is wound down by now, right?
Well, when I was 18 and I had been doing meth, I was up for 5 days once. I tried really hard to get sleep. I knew I had to work in the morning. I didn't get sleep. And I remember having to wash all this body art off me that my chick had drawn all over me with a Sharpie. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, my God.
And scabs everywhere, you know?
For people that don't know, if you're doing meth and Jeremy said he had body art on him, this process had to take 6 to 12 hours.
It was bad.
Yeah.
It was real bad. And I showed up and I couldn't remember my lines and I was so hurting, dude. So hurting, so ashamed, so, ugh.
Now, were they, was the staff kind of...
Incomprehensible demoralization. They're like, dude... You know, I can't remember my lines. I've messed up the whole thing. They got millions of dollars going on in production.
And they
know what I mean?
You. This is your family. They've watched you grow up.
8 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? You know?
So
are you
Hoff
smoking weed or something?
Time?
That's what Hoff says to me. Are you smoking weed or something?
Yeah, that's the weed.
Bro, some weed would probably help me at this point. You know? And I said, you know what? Screw you guys. And I flipped everybody off in the middle of production. F you. I don't need you. I don't need this. I'm out of here.
Wow.
And the resentment,
you showed them.
Yeah, I showed them. The resentments had been building up for a while, you know, and I was just so embarrassed and ashamed, and I walked away from the show, dude.
Yeah.
I just didn't answer my phone.
Which I think that's a good thing that we could touch on right there, because I went through a similar thing, and I think most addicts out there do, where life starts feeling really hard, and you're like, yeah, I'm using a little bit too much, but, you know, the cops are harassing me, mom's harassing me, my coworkers are harassing me, and you start feeling victimized by everybody on the outside. And you said you had resentments.
Yeah, I couldn't be honest with anybody. I couldn't tell anybody what I was really doing. Are you kidding me?
But you're pointing the finger at them like, you know, gosh darn it, Donna, get off me, or whatever, right?
Yep.
Right? So we have this delusional thing that it's everybody else, and yeah, maybe I do a little too much meth, but if you didn't have that. Yeah.
If you hadn't have been writing me out of episodes, you know, last season, and if you producers weren't just screwing all the chicks and didn't care about the storylines anymore, like, you know, it was all about everything else other than me, you know?
Yeah. And so what I want to do too is kind of rein it back in, because this show's supposed to help everybody. And people can be terminally unique and go, well, yeah, whatever. I wasn't an actor, so I can't relate to this. But if you're out there struggling, maybe you can relate it to your job where you feel like you're victimized. You're not fitting in anymore. It's causing problems for you. You could be a waiter. You could be a pastor. This can happen anywhere when you're using. And we feel like we're the eternal victims.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's our lifestyle and the choices we're making that makes us not fit in with society anymore.
It's all about perception and what my purpose is. You know what I mean? Besides being a superstar, besides being on the world's number one TV show, besides having Lamborghinis, besides having perfect six pack, besides being on the cover of fitness magazines, besides having a hot wife, you know what I mean? Well, all the stuff I ever had, none of it really ever made me happy. You know, none of it was ever enough.
Insatiable.
And, you know, right here, right now, today, it's enough. You know what I mean? Like I can be happy. And even though, you know, supposedly I have a lot less, I really have a lot more.
Well, that's the journey of the Buddha, right? He renounced all the prince stuff he had. Yeah. So you're hitting the bottom.
Yeah, I got arrested when I was 20 for manufacturing meth. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And
that went on the news?
Yeah, in the papers.
Sweet little boy on Baywatch, people. Okay? This is the sweet little boy on Baywatch. Now he's manufacturing meth.
I remember I used to think, man, if I just only had an ounce, if I had a whole ounce to myself, I'd be happy.
Problem solved.
Yeah, problem solved. And then here I am 20 and I got a lot of drugs. And I'm selling drugs, and I'm really cooking it and cleaning it for myself, because so many people ripped me off from being a Hollywood guy, celebrity guy. They thought I had money and they didn't want to give me the good stuff. They give me the crap. You know what I mean? So I learned how to take care of myself. That was really it. But so I'm like, man, it's not fun anymore. Like I'm not even high. No matter how much I do, I'm not even high. This sucks. I remember looking out the window that morning and being like, something's not right, man. Something's off. And I walk out the door and boom, you know, vans, dudes with shotguns, jumping over fences, you know, get on the ground. And I'm like, oh crap. And there I am, you know, now I got my hands behind my back and my mouth is so cottony. I can't even swallow, dude.
Fire Marshal Bill.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so high right now. Like, oh my God. 5 minutes ago, I thought I wasn't high at all. All of a sudden, I realize my liver, my kidney, I realize my organs are all pushing against each other, and I'm so sucked up emaciated and scabby, and they're like shaming me. Dude, what's wrong with you, kid? Look at you, kid. And these guys is Orange County cops. I'm an Orange County kid. They know who I am. They've seen me grow up. They know what I've done to myself. And they're going, you're going to prison. 7 to 35 years manufacturing. It's over for you. You know, you better give us somebody right now that's cooking mess somewhere right now, or it's over for you. And it's been a consistent theme in my life, is I never realize I have a problem until it's too late. You know, so in that moment, the hopelessness kicked in, but it was too late. And for the first time, that was it. At 20, I said, just to get high. All this, just for one more hit.
Right.
I'm an addict. Oh my gosh, I'm an addict. But a lot of good it does me now, because I'm going to prison. So, well, whoopee-de-doo. I have this moment of clarity, but a lot of good it does me, it's too late.
You admitted defeat and powerlessness.
Yep, that was the first time right there at 20.
Yeah, and there's a lot of literature out there that says, hey, we could probably jump off and do the about face before it gets too bad, but who's willing to do that before it gets too bad?
Never.
Yeah,
I'm a fighter, man.
Yeah.
I'm not giving up.
Yeah, same with me. So, I went through a similar thing, so that's cool. So what did you have to do to get some sobriety working in your favor in the beginning? What was key?
Well, luckily, my mom lied to me. So I got out of the trouble, got a lawyer. It was very expensive. We had some money hiding from me. And it was, you know, possession with intent to sell. And I had to go to jail for 90 days. My mom lied to me and said part of the judge's orders were that I had to go to rehab for 6 months after the 90 days, but it was actually a lie, which I had no clue of. So it was 3 months in jail and 6 months. It was 9 months of not even having the option of getting high that maybe my head popped out of my butt a little bit. If I would have just gone to jail for 30, you know, if I would have just whatever, I'd probably be dead right now. Right. But 9 months of not getting high, I was like, okay, maybe I can. And honestly, after the jail and the rehab, I went home and I didn't do what was suggested. I peed in bottles and got depressed and slept in bed until my hair hurt so bad I couldn't lay there anymore. You know, and I didn't go to meetings, and I knew I couldn't walk out of the house or something bad would happen. But I wasn't, you know, willing to go to meetings or whatever. I didn't really think they would help. And my mom kind of forced me, you know, and you know, first guys were like, hey, Ged, what's your number? Hey, you want need a ride home? I was like, oh my gosh, these are pedophiles or something weird. What's going on? What do they want from me?
People in meetings trying to help. Yeah, scary. Like,
you want something from me, dude. This is weird. Why are you being so nice? But eventually, hooked up with some guys around my age that surfed and shot pool till 3 a.m. and drank energy drinks. I was like, okay, I can try this, you know? Yeah. But there was always a meeting attached to it. Really, I just wanted to shoot the pool and surf and stay up and chase chicks. But there was always somehow a meeting before or after. Mm. So I had to, you know, do that. And I got their same sponsor and I worked the steps the way they worked the steps. And I stayed sober for over 10 years.
That's right.
I was had commitments and had sponsees and so all that
stuff.
So
did the work. Even though you really didn't want to, you weren't sure it would work. Yeah, I've heard that story a lot. I think Nate had a similar one. So let's press pause there because you were sober for 10 years and then you weren't sober. So and there's some other stuff we can talk about in that journey. But let's throw in another song here. I think appropriate would be Change in the House of Flies.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Change into
always love that song. Always love it. So here's where we were. Change. There was change in the House of Flies. You got sober for 10 years. You worked the deal. You really didn't even mean to or want to, it sounded like, but you did.
Stumbled upon it.
Yeah, and then and so this is what drives me crazy is when people say, well, this sobriety program doesn't work because people get loaded again. And what one thing I wanted to mention is what people don't realize is that this is a chronic disease. It's never handled. Like a cold is acute. So acute means when it's cured, it's gone. That cold's done. Addiction is chronic. Mm-hmm. It's always going to come back.
Progressive.
If we don't treat it.
Fatal.
So we never hit this permanent state of recovery. Mm-hmm. We have to always work on it. So what took you out 10 years? I remember seeing you speak at about 9 or 10 years down in Aliso Viejo. What took you out?
Hey, what happened? You know, there's a lot of intricacies and, you know, little bits and pieces in there. But really, I stopped going to meetings.
Yeah.
That was it, you know?
Disconnected.
Totally. I stopped doing what I was doing to get what I was getting. And if you know the story of Samson and Delilah from the Bible, you know, Samson was this guy, this warrior, and he wasn't a perfect godly man. He made mistakes. He did stuff wrong, but he never cut his hair, right? And that his long hair was a representation of, you know, his allegiance to God. And, you know, I just, so many parallels there with my story. Like I wasn't perfect, but I was a warrior and I didn't drink, you know, instead of not cutting my hair, it was just that I didn't drink. And right. Everything I touched in retrospect just was gold. Like if I look back, I was doing so much epic stuff. I was, you know, after getting clean and sober in the first place and being kind of beat down and defeated and, you know, ego crushed and career ruined and stuff. And in that 10 years, I built it back and I built it better than ever. And I was traveling all over the world again. I was producing parties. I had the license for Ed Hardy parties worldwide, Von Dutch, you know, fashion shows worldwide. I had all these Young Jock and Chingy and Birdman and all these like guys from You Got Served, like performing in my fashion shows. And I dressed Paris Hilton that. And I dressed freaking Nicole Richie and I had the Osbournes in my fashion. It's like I was killing it, you know?
Sober.
Going to meetings,
yeah,
having commitments, and I was untouchable. You know, I didn't have to be perfect, but everything worked out and went well. It was very accumulative and progressive, and life was really good. And I just thought after 10 years or so that, you know, I forgot that because I wasn't still connected to like-minded individuals as much as I had been before. You know, vacations, I'm busy, I'm out of town, you know, then it's a week, then it's a month. And I was just going to my home group. It started by just going to my home group once a week. I got a home group, I just go there once a week. Musicians Anonymous.
I remember you know? That.
Yeah.
Nate, what do they say when you only go to one meeting a week? Don't cut down.
Yeah. And, you know, life happens. And so then somehow along the lines, I've convinced myself that, well, you know, I was in my 20s and, you know, I was in my teens when I was partying and I used to want to die. You know, I used to hate my life and I don't hate my life anymore. I love it. There's no way I would throw all this away. And so probably I can have a drink sometimes, you know, and I was like smoking weed, doing a drink, and I would even take Adderall, like half the Adderall. I'm definitely not an addict.
Well, that's prescribed.
I got a 30 milligram Adderall. I'm only taking 15.
Prove I'm good, dude.
You know, and what, a quarter of a Xanax once or twice a week to get a great night's sleep? That's not bad.
No.
I'm totally good.
And how long did that last? That was the control, right?
They talk about the control.
Trying to control and enjoy using.
Yeah. And honestly,
how'd you feel then when you were chipping, as they say? Did you feel rad still?
No, dude. I had personal training clients and I had a wife at the time. And, you know, a lot of insecurity started coming in where I'd go to train the guy and I'd be like half, like super stoned and Adderall down. And I'd be like, wait, what am I even doing, dude? Like, why am I even a trainer? Whoa. Wait, what? I forgot. You know, I started slipping, dude, and it didn't feel good. Kind of chappy, you know, not great. But I'm like this super stubborn guy, just work harder, grind, you know, put my nose to the grindstone, just give it my all. And I was competing in jiu-jitsu tournaments, winning jiu-jitsu tournaments, training all the time. And man, you know, so I just thought if I had the outside stuff was all looked good, I'm this champion athlete.
Right.
I got this house and this chick, and I've built, you know, I've been this successful sober nightclub promoter, and now I'm grown up. And you know, steroids was a really bad call, doing steroids, taking steroids. But again, just stopping going to meetings was the biggest mistake.
Yeah. I went through the same thing. I call it kind of like the two voice thing. When I'm in meetings all the time and I'm working it, once in a while you see a drink or something and you go, that looks good. And that other voice comes in fast and goes, no way, that'll ruin your life. As I strayed from meetings in the program, when that thought would come in, that voice that said, no, don't do that, took a long time to come in, and then after a while didn't at all. And all I heard was like, yeah, you probably could pull that off again. Mm. And I'm hearing the same story from you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what was the bottom the second time?
Oh my goodness. Well,
oh my God.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Was it worse than the first?
So much worse, dude.
Yeah.
So much worse.
So what happened?
I mean, it's a
did you go back? Well, you don't have a, you know, we don't have a ton of time left, but maybe, what was the...
I mean, so I got my heart broke, and the heartbreak was compounded with a hormonal meltdown because of the depression from the heartbreak and a relationship lost due to, like, anger issues from being drunk and stuff, you know what I mean? Getting angry in an argument and a fight that led to some betrayal and some deceit and stuff like that. I kind of had to go into hiding for a little bit, and I stopped taking the steroids. So I had this hormonal meltdown with the heartbreak. So I'm literally 2 months straight just weeping, and I'm drinking cognac out of the bottle, and I'm like, I can remember hours a day spent only on my heels and the backs of my shoulder blades. Like, my whole body would be arced up in the air. Only my heels and my shoulder blades would be touching the ground. And be like, ah!
Poor guy.
Like, no, for real, dude.
I believe it. I know you. Yeah. I believe it, bro.
Oh my God!
So the women, the
depression, the losing my recovery, giving my recovery up. I had lost and given up so
shame.
Much shame, and it was bad. So I hadn't used meth for 14 years. On 9/24/2000, it's a tattoo on my right foot. 9/24/00. I got it on my right foot for all the years of starting off on the wrong one. And on 9/24/14, I'm sitting on a toilet in a high rise in Marina Del Rey. With a pookie in my mouth for the first time. Kind of weird.
A pookie is a pipe or meth
what's
pipe.
A pookie?
Yeah.
Meth pipe.
For those who don't know.
Yeah, so I had been living with this girl.
You make it sound all cute. It ain't.
Oh, it's a cute pookie. It's a pookie. She called it a pookie.
So you're back to the meth. You went back to what you do. That's what happened.
You know, and it just finds me, dude. I didn't even know this girl was on it.
Right.
And somehow I was gravitated towards this woman who was hiding it and ended up back on it. You know, give me that. And the heartbreak and the shame and the guilt and the meth created such a monster because I said, screw everything, screw everyone. I'm going full bore. I am going to be a cutthroat criminal. Like, I'm pimping hoes. I'm stealing credit cards. I'm money counterfeiting. I'm home invasion robberies. I'm stealing cars. If you owe me money, I'm driving this car into your house through the door. I got robbed at gunpoint twice, got gnarly fights.
I heard some of the stories. They're insane.
Dude, it was horrible. So yeah, like, here I am, Mr. Samson, still thinking I can wield this power of recovery of God. You know, I'm still untouchable, and I'm not. And, you know, I got all these gangsters thinking, look at this Hollywood kid. We're going to take him for everything he's worth. And I had always been honest, paying for people's stuff that they stole. I had been stolen from when I was young and had money. So many people ripped me off. I was like, I'm never stealing from people. That's so wrong. That's so hurtful to take people's stuff and to screw them over. And this time I just went off the deep end, dude.
So how'd you get out? What happened?
Once again, you know, arrested, looking at 7 years in prison, you know, and I'm in my 30s now. And, just thought it was too late, you know. Once again, went too far, took it too far, and had to do some jail time and had to go to a few rehabs. And gosh, man, I think the insanity of the crime, the quick fix crime mentality, you know, oh, I'll just do a little credit card fraud real quick. I'll get that. Yeah. Now I know how to get back on my feet. I'm going to get traveler's insurance. I'm going to crash a rental car on the way to Vegas, break my pinky. I just got to whack my pinky one time and it's $100,000, you know, that's going to fix it. That mentality was harder to fix because of the people I was hanging around with and my crew. That was even harder than the drugs. Cause after the drugs were gone, I was like still thinking of stuff
in rehab. The behavioral stuff can be harder to change than the addiction stuff.
It was. It really was.
So you got sober. And what's key now? Like this, when I went out at 3 years. What's key now that's working for you so you don't go out again? What is the key to your success moving forward?
Well, I kind of struggled with this because, man, I went to six meetings a week. I had three commitments. I had sponsees. They say when you give up long term recovery, you know, you have to do it different than you did before. And I was like, but I did it perfect. You know, what am I gonna do? Mm. You know. And this time it's been working in recovery, you know, staying 24/7 connected to the recovery industry, being in the trenches and digging.
Don't walk away from what worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing for me. Yeah. When I came back, I was like, I got to stay connected. Mm-hmm. Don't let the life that recovery gave me get in way of my recovery life.
Right.
And then that's where the vortex of radness is, right? When we help other people and you see the lights come on for people who are like us, right?
Yep.
Love the story. Love you. Some of it was breaking my heart because I care about you and hearing that because I empathize. I feel,
Well, for what it's worth, you know, today is so much different, you know, to be activated, to be useful, to be a productive member in society, to be, to carry a message, to see my life just happening once again. Like it used to, like I know it can and I know it does when God's in the driver's seat and having just be life, my days being blessed infinitely is so much, it's so much different and so great now, dude. So,
yeah.
And so don't feel bad. Don't cry for me, Argentina.
and then I sit here and I think and I look at like there's a bunch, you guys don't know, in this room there's five sober people here and I think we all got years and years and years. If you add up, we probably got 40 years. You get really lonely, you come in, you kind of feel alone, and then you have this brotherhood that grows up around you, and you're like, Jeremy Jackson, Nate the singer, Death on Wednesday, my homie Brando, I mean, Zach, there's some rad people.
Smart, good-intentioned dudes, yeah. What?
So, on that word of radness, I don't know if y'all know or have been exposed to the rad musical stylings of Mr. Jeremy Jackson. I think what we're going to do right now is, hey, can you freestyle a little bit?
Yeah. Sure. Oh, I mean, it's Rock to Recovery. You always gotta bust out with some creativity, right?
Gotta bust out. We're gonna use some music to just get a little bit high naturally. So, we're gonna throw this beat down. Here you go, man. This is for you from Jeremy Jackson.
At Jeremy Jackson Fitness on Instagram. Check me out.
That's right.
Check this out. Just cause you heard of me, don't mean you know me though. She might not have been Juliet, but I'm keeping it Romeo. So welcome to Hollywood, that's where the phonies go. But I never been fake, I kept it real to the chromosomes. Cause that's in my DNA, like shows about TNA. I woke up this morning, I said, what am I gonna be today? I called up my mama, she told me, boy, what you eat today? Get down on your knees and pray, yeah, that's what the preachers say. So I say, Hail Mary, now my soul's full of grace. I have no regrets for the mistakes that I made. I carpe the diem, that means I'm seizing the day. I live in the moment cause there ain't no other way. School of hard knocks, yeah, I paid off my tuition. I'm letting people know I'm out here on a mission. Cause you can have it if you see it in your vision, but you won't catch me slipping back in that kitchen. Oh yeah. See, times are getting rocky like a mountain climb. Had to purify my life, I'm talking alkaline. Woo. Searching for the answers I was bound to find. Cause the body and the soul can't thrive without the mind. Looking at the clock and time was moving faster. I'm feeling good, I'm moving on to greener pastures. Yeah, I'm freaking out for cooler than Alaska. And if you feeling this, you know disaster, cause y'all turned down, not stay turned. The money and fame, what came first? I know my truth, words can't hurt, and I can flip my flow up like a season. Woo! And haters always got their reasons, yeah, and they just want someone to beat on, so I hit them with the poof, be gone.
Yeah! Hey! I hope you all know that he has no papers written. He's not reading anything. This is all freestyle. That is some skill.
You like that?
I love it. Made me feel good. I hope it made you guys feel good.
Yeah.
That made me feel good.
That's the vindication story right there.
Yeah, that is the vindication. Man, all that hip-hop you listen to sure does pay off.
Hip-hop, you don't stunt.
Yeah, man. So, plans for going forward? How about this? What's a message for people out there that are where you were? What would you tell them?
Oh, man. If they were where I was?
What would you tell somebody that's lost? Looking for answers.
Man, I deal with this almost every day, dealing with sponsees and people who want this, but they're not ready for it, man. And you really gotta drop everything you think you know. There's no meme or quote or new year, new you. There's no Michael Jackson, this is it moment. You just have to throw yourself at the mercy of somebody who has successfully gotten clean and sober. You know, if I want to run a marathon, I'm not just going to show up on race day, man. I'm going to make a lot of mistakes, and those mistakes are going to cost me a lot of time, maybe injuries, maybe failure. I'm not just going to say I want to scuba dive and jump in the ocean and try to do it. I'm going to go to somebody who's a pro. Man, you ran a lot of marathons. Teach me how to run a marathon. And you just got to drop everything you think you know, empty the vessel, and get filled up with people who have years of experience doing this thing successfully.
Ask for help. Yeah. Ask for help. Ask it's for waiting help, there man. For you.
Yeah.
Jeremy,
we're
Nate,
waiting for you. We
Brando,
want you.
Zach, love you guys. This has been love incredible. Watch yay. Recovery Radio, KX93.5. Thank you to New Vista
love you.
Behavioral
love you
Health, and we are out of here.
Woo. Good job.